Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. The topic of today's show is humor and laughter, one that conjures up images of great comedians. Sadly, last Tuesday, we lost Robin Williams, possibly the best improvisational genius this world has ever known. Robin knew the importance of making others laugh. Who can forget the Patch Adams hospital scene in the children's ward with Patch wearing the big red clown nose to cheer the children up? Today's guest, Alan Klein, also believes in the power of the red clown nose. He has inspired and uplifted many with laughter and humor. He is an award-winning professional speaker based in San Francisco, and author of several books, including his newest one, Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By. His books, Inspiration for a Lifetime, Change Your Life, and The Healing Power of Humor, have sold over 500,000 copies combined. Alan has a master's degree in humor, he really does, and is the world's only certified Jollytologist. In 2009, Alan Klein was awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. His website is alanklein.com. That's AlenKlein.com. And now it's my pleasure to welcome my guest. Hi, Alan.
Hi, good morning. I'm kind of chuckling here because I think we're going to sound like a vaudeville team, Fine and Klein.
It's true. Hey, you know, it's the making of a new partnership. So can you tell us, Alan, what is a Jollytologist and how you claimed that name?
Well, first of all, I believe one could be whatever one wants to be in this life. You just create it. And I went back to school to learn about therapeutic humor. I got a master's degree in it, believe it or not. It's actually a master's of human, H-U-M-A-N, development. And my thesis was The Healing Power of Humor, which turned into my first book, although the writing is very different in each publication. But because I studied humor for so many years, the Greek word for humor is jellos, G-E-L-O-S. So I started to call myself a jellotologist. And people thought I had something to do with that wiggly dessert, you know. And so I changed it to jollytologist. And I think people get a little sense more of kind of what I do, which is show people how to find and use humor in their not-so-funny stuff. And the interesting thing for me, Randy, is that after I coined that term, jollytologist, people I see the, in the world, there's now joyologists, happyologists, laughologists, on and on and on and on. So I guess I started a little trend there with jollytologists.
You are a trailblazer, Alan. So, you know, the picture that you sent me, your headshot, is you with a red clown nose. And I guess that probably represents you. But can you tell us about the power of the red clown nose?
Wow, that sounds like another book right there, The Power of the Red Clown Nose. Well, in my keynote speeches and workshops, everyone gets one. They don't know what it is. It's in a package. I hand it to them. I ask them to keep their eyes closed and think about some little negative stress in their life, maybe even some physical ache or pain. And they concentrate on that for, you know, a second or not a second, but like 10 seconds or a minute. And then I ask them, keep their eyes closed, take that thing, they don't know what it is, out of the packet, put that thing on their nose, and then look around the room. And what do you think happens? You know, say there's 500 people in the room. What happens is people start to laugh. You're laughing now.
Right.
And I just make my point that you don't need, you know, you don't need to tell a joke or know a joke or be talented with humor. All you need is some reminder to help you to remember to lighten up. And so I ask people to take that with them, use it to start staff meetings, use it in traffic jams. And I get back incredible stories of how this one little thing, this one little prop, help people lighten up. You know, if you're upset with something, put it on and look in the mirror, you know, with that nose on. One woman wrote back and she said, I bought a dozen of them. Should I put it all around my house? And if my husband and I, you know, start to get in a little argument, one of us puts on the red clown nose, suddenly we start laughing and the argument stops. Something as simple as that.
That is so powerful. Well, you began your mission of healing with humor when you were a young man and your wife was diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer. Can you tell us about how you figured out that humor helped and what you did?
Well, yeah, we were living in New York City at the time. She was from San Francisco. I always wanted to live here, so we moved here. A year later, we got a Victorian house. And shortly after that, we discovered she had a rare liver disease. It actually was not cancer. It was a primary biliary cirrhosis where the bile ducts clog up.
Okay.
And there was no cure. And so for 3 years, she went downhill and did pass away. And after she died, you know, it was I had a 10-year-old daughter at the time. I still have a daughter, but she's no longer 10. But it was not, you know, it was a very difficult time. There was no hospice at the time. There were no liver transplants at the time. It was very difficult. But Ellen had a great sense of humor. And even though there was tears and difficulty during that time, the humor, I noticed, helped us rise above the situation, even just for a short while. One example, she had a copy of Playgirl magazine with a male nude centerfold, and she said she was in the hospital, and she said, Alan, I really like this picture this month. Can you put on the wall by the bed over there? And I said, Ellen, this is a hospital. A little risque for that. She said, well, maybe you're right. She said, why don't you get a leaf from the plant over there and cover up that part? And, Randy, I did that for the first day. It was fine. Second day was fine. But by the third day, the leaves start shriveling up. And we would start to laugh, you know, just remembering that. And looking back, I realized, you know, that little bit of laughter gave us a reprieve, gave us a perspective on what was happening. And even though it was only a couple of seconds, it just was like, it just was so beneficial at the time. And so after Ellen died, I gave up a business I had in San Francisco, went back to school, and got the master's degree, and then wrote The Healing Power of Humor.
Wow. What a story. I love it. That's great. That's great. You know, many comedians use humor when broaching the subjects of death, dying, and bereavement and illness. Why do you think that works?
Well, you know, we think of death and dying as very serious, but very funny things happen in some of those situations. And I think I'm kind of a spiritual person, so I believe there's some higher power that gave us that ability to find humor to help us cope. Because tears are important. I think grief is important, but I think we can grieve too long. And my thing is that, because I worked in hospice also, and what I noticed, particularly with one patient, she was a young woman in her 30s. Her mother had died, and suddenly her life stopped. For like 2 years, she couldn't get over the fact that her mother died. And her mother was pretty elderly, so it was expected. But she couldn't get on with her life. And looking back, I realized two lives were lost. The mother who had died and the daughter who no longer was enjoying herself, enjoying her life, not living fully. And so I think at some point you need to move on, and I think some higher power gave us sense of humor, you know, to lighten up about it and to move on with our life.
I absolutely agree. And I also think that that higher power has a great sense of humor. Do you agree?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at the giraffe or a hippopotamus. And you can see the kind of sense of humor, whoever that is, created.
Right, or the anteater or whatever.
I know. Yes. It's amazing.
Yes, I have little games that I play with my, I call him God, and he makes me laugh, and we do this regularly.
You
so
mean
it's,
she
it's
makes
very
you
funny.
Laugh? How do you know it's a he?
Well, I'm just saying that. So I don't want to call this higher power an it, but this supreme being, we'll just say that, supreme being.
Right.
We have this little game we play, and it makes me laugh. So it's very funny.
Good.
Charlie Chaplin once said, "Life is a tragedy when seen in close-up, but a comedy in a long shot." I don't want to put you on the spot, but what does that quote mean to you?
Well, to me it means, you know, you're stuck in a traffic jam. It's terrible, whatever the traffic jam is in your life, whether on the highway or elsewhere, at work, you know, in your life, whatever. And it seems awful at the time. But, you know, when you look back, often not only does it not seem so bad at the time, but sometimes you realize, hey, you know, I learned something from that experience, or I grew from that experience. Well, that experience, a lot of people say, you know, that changed my life. When I interviewed people for my second book, which is called The Courage to Laugh, often cancer patients, AIDS patients would say, I didn't want cancer or AIDS, but that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because it suddenly made them stop and made them look at their life. Somehow they grew spiritually. They were more loving. They were more appreciative of every day, of their friends, of their family, you know. So, I mean, those things come along. They're not so great. But in looking back often, which is what Charlie Chaplin is saying, looking back, sometimes we see, you know, why that was in my life. Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, it makes sense in my life. I definitely believe that. I definitely believe that.
Yeah, and often we don't see the humor
Adversity, it either kills us or it makes us stronger and more,
right.
You know, I always say when we're brought to our knees, we have no other choice but to look up, you know, or let
right.
go. And, so, yeah.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I realize maybe what the adversity is doing is like stripping away all our pretenses, stripping away those things that we hold on to, and therefore we're open more to something that's higher.
Right. I do believe that. I believe that we are that this supreme being, or and our spirit guides and all those who are unseen who are there to help us, really whisper in our ear all the time. And sometimes we just don't notice. And it isn't until we reach a very hard time that we really open up our ears and we hear it. So sometimes there is a purpose to that, I agree.
Right.
You talk
it's
about
like,
the five...
you know, things are going along well and we don't pay attention. And so sometimes I think we need to be like a little knock on the head, hit over the head, and then go, now I know, you know. So,
exactly. Exactly. Human beings are strange that way. You talk about the five laws of laughter. What are the five laws of laughter?
Well, I came up with that so people will remember in my keynote speeches and in my workshops, just the simple word, L-A-U-G-H. So if you want to get more laughter in your life, just remember that one word and the five things that I think the letters stand for. So L is let go. Because if you're holding on to anything, if you're angry, upset, frustrated about anything, you can't laugh about it. So the first notion of getting more laughter in your life is to start to let go. So you're in that traffic jam, you know, instead of boiling over and stressing out, which is not healthy, you need to start letting go. Sing to the radio, you know, think about the shopping list you need to get at the store, whatever it is, but see things differently. I often blow bubbles out the window when I'm in a traffic jam. just to try to let go of that. And in my workshops, I have a wonderful process for that, and your listeners can do this wherever they are, is get a balloon, make believe you're blowing in the stress that you're experiencing, and then let that balloon go. And you know what happens when you let a balloon go that has air in it. It just swirls all around. And what's so wonderful in my programs is to see like 500 balloons flying around the air. Sometimes people get hit by other people's stress, other people's balloons. But it's just a playful way of saying to yourself, I'm not going to get stressed out here. So you've got to start letting go, whatever it is. Second letter is attitude, and that's what finding humor in a situation is. It's changing your attitude. U is, and I cheated a little here, Randy, U is for Y-O-U.
Okay.
You are the only one that can change your attitude. No one else can really do it for you. So you need a G, go do it. And that's why the Healing Power of Humor has 14 techniques of how to find some humor. Just one, as we talked about, was having a prop around. I also like to have photos of funny things around. I have a picture I'm looking at of my daughter with a cream pie in her face that she always wanted when she was a teenager. I have a picture of Woody Allen looking at me, an autographed photo. I have all kinds of props around. I have Teletubby toys, clowns, figures, you know, just rubber chicken with a red nose on it, stuff like that. So just have something around. Or 14 techniques, different techniques to find the humor. And then the H, so that's go, do it. H is open your humor eyes and humor ears, because it's really all around us. When we get stressed out, we forget to see it. But it is there. One example, Randy, I was in a laundromat, and I looked on the wall, and there was a sign that said, when the machine stops, remove all your clothing. Which I did. So there's humor all around if people just remember L-A-U-G-H.
Well, that's so great. That is so great. You're so silly, but that's a wonderful way to be.
I love silly. I think silly is underrated.
I do, too.
I think if we were all more silly, you know, we'd be less stressed out.
I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten sillier. You know, you're silly in your teenage years, and then you sort of get really serious and focused, and then I think you come back to it when you really feel comfortable in your own skin.
Well, I hope so. You know, my wife had a theory, and it certainly applies to me, that what we don't get when we were younger, we get more in our later life. So I was a very, very serious child. You know, I didn't play well. I don't know. I took life really seriously. I don't know why. Maybe because I was growing up in World War II and, you know, the sirens and stuff all around us and relatives going off to war and stuff. And oh, the rationing lines, you know, standing in line for hours for, speaking about Jell-O, a package of Jell-O. So I don't know if that influenced me or not, but I was a very serious child. And now I'm finding, you know, as we just talked about, I'm getting sillier and sillier as I get older.
Oh, I love that. I think that's great. Another quote by Garrison Keillor said, "Avoid humorless people and do not marry one, for God's sake." What do you think the importance of humor is in intimate relationships?
Well, I don't see how you could have a really good relationship without laughing together. I mean, it's such a wonderful thing when you see something funny together with someone, or you can play with your partner or joke with your partner, not put down humor, not that kind of thing, but just kind of, for better word, being silly, you know. I don't know, but that's my point of view. Someone might, one example I remember, and this is not a close relationship, but I remember a woman in my workshop. She was a school teacher. No, I know what she said. She wasn't a school teacher. Sorry. She said, "I could not laugh with my kids." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because then they won't take me seriously when I have to reprimand them." And I said, "I think it's just the opposite, that if you could laugh with your kids, they're going to enjoy you. They're going to listen to you more. They're going to, you know, want to be around you. They're going to, then when you do discipline them, it may be, they really may take that seriously because they realize, hey, suddenly something switched." But that's me. You know, that's she, but she could not, she said, "I cannot joke around, kid around with my kids." And I thought that was pretty sad.
That is really sad. I mean, and it's also the contrast of the joking and the seriousness that really keeps them in line, because they know when you're joking, everything's cool, and when you become serious, something's up.
It's important. It makes it important. Exactly.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I think in relationships, whether it's your kids, whether it's your partner, or whatever it is, that laughter and joking and kidding around you know, you certainly, after a while, you develop, sometimes you don't have to say anything, but just to look at each other, and you start to maybe laugh or smile, because you both know, like from past history, this is something that, you know, you could laugh together. My daughter, for example, and I, even though she's grown now, but when she was younger, we would walk down the street and see a parking meter, and we'd go over and make believe it was a microphone, and we would sing together. So we would play together all the time, and I think it's made us so much closer.
That is beautiful. That is so sweet. You know, for all those people who are listening, you're giving them great ideas. You're giving all of us great ideas for the bubbles in the car and the red nose around the house and singing at a parking meter. That's just great tools for everyone to have in their life. I really think they're invaluable.
Great.
You
and, you know, the
said,
Healing Power of Humor book has 14 techniques, and so it has a lot of things you were just talking about.
Okay. The healing power. Say it again.
The healing power of humor.
Okay, very good. So that's a great tool for anyone who wants to find out more about the things they can do to make themselves laugh in ordinary places, right?
Or extraordinary places.
Extraordinary places. You wrote an article called Laugh It Off, Losing Weight with Laughter. And you say that a hearty laugh is a calorie burner. Really?
It is. Yeah, the research has shown that when you're laughing, and it seems to make sense. I mean, if I... I'm using muscles to do that, right? And so it burns off some calories. Now, not a lot, and it may take a lot of laughter to lose a lot of weight, but it is... a calorie burner, because it's exercise. And someone, I don't know if it was Norman Cousins or someone else, called laughter internal jogging. I don't know if they knew it at the time, because that was years ago, but it does, it's like jogging. It does burn off calories. So it's good to laugh. And what I just did on the other level, the physiological benefits of laughing is you sometimes have to cough after you laugh.
Right.
So you get the congestion up, you get fresh air in your lungs, so you're thinking better, you're oxygenating your blood. So there's all these physical benefits. But one thing I should point out, Randy, is the difference between laughter and humor. Because we use them kind of interchangeably, even I do that. But for me, laughter is the physical expression, the ha-ha-ha physicalness that comes out of seeing something humorous.
Okay.
So if I see something funny, then I start to laugh. So there is all laughter yoga now where people just laugh to laugh, which is beneficial. But I focus on the humor, how to find and use humor in your changes, your challenges, and kind of life's not-so-funny stuff.
Right, right. You are a well-loved inspirational speaker. You speak at least twice a month to associations and everything, and you have a large following of fans that you have inspired and uplifted, including the legendary Jerry Lewis. So you've really, you've met him? Tell us about him.
Well, I've only met him really briefly, so I can't really speak too much, but he was kind enough to give me a quote, and I don't have the quote in my head. You may have it, but it's something about me saving the human condition, or watching over the human condition.
Right.
And so I'm very grateful to that. But I did... worked at CBS Television for many years. I was a scenic designer in my former life, and I created the backgrounds, the sets for Captain Kangaroo was my big show, and also I worked on Jackie Gleason and Merv Griffin show and all those big shows at CBS, Ed Sullivan show at the time. But you're too young to remember some of those.
Are you
I'm
kidding?
Sure.
No. I was on Romper Room.
Oh, right. Great.
I was on
Romper
Room.
So if you remember Captain Kangaroo, I think part of why maybe I'm silly and in my programs I use a lot of props is because on the Captain Kangaroo show, I had to think like a child. So if Bunny Rabbit would trick Mr. Green Jeans into giving him some carrots by designing this machine, you know, that Green Jeans would press the button and carrots would come out, I was the one that had to come up with what that looked like. And so I had to think, how would a child design that? So a child might go to the kitchen and pull out a colander or pull out a strainer or a dish or, you know, take a cardboard box or find a book around the house and make this thing that look like a carrot machine. So I had to think like a child, and I think that is just kept me going, and so I see the world more with a childlike view sometimes.
Right. So even though you didn't realize what your destiny was going to be, you this was all percolating in one way or another.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that, because that is what we were just talking about a little while ago, is when we're in the middle of something, we don't know what is down the road. You know, we're so caught up in what's happening to us that down the road this may be very valuable information or training or whatever, but we can't see that because we're too close to it, and also we don't know the future.
That's
and,
true.
And yeah, so it's all, for me, it's all like grist for the mill. It's all stuff that might be valuable down the road in one way or another.
Definitely. Nothing learned is ever lost.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what was I going to ask you? So you are a hospice volunteer. I don't know if you still are, but I am also a hospice volunteer. I do vigil. I sit by the bedside of those who are imminent. Do you have any interesting...
Which hospice? Can you say
Heartland
that on the
hospice,
air?
Heartland Hospice of South Florida.
Oh, great. I just spoke to Heartland here in California. Yeah, that's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's a great... great organization.
If they ever need a speaker.
Okay. I will let them know. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've spoken at 5 national hospice conferences, over 24 state conferences, and over 100 other local hospices around the country.
Wow. Do you have any great stories of your hospice visits and how humor helped?
Well, you know, at that time I wasn't into humor, but I noticed several things, like I'm trying to think of some of the – oh, yeah, I do have a kind of funny story. I was a brand-new hospice volunteer, and I was going to do anything for the patient. And I went in, she was maybe my second patient, and I went in, she was lying on the couch, and the music of Dating Game was playing. And I'm sitting there, you know, time is passing, and I'm not doing anything. So I said to her, listen, I'm here to help you. I'm a volunteer. Is there anything I can do? And she didn't answer. So I waited a couple of minutes. I asked her again, and she said, yeah, do you know how to disco? And I said, yes. Well, could you get up and disco for me? So there was the music of Dating Game, and I discoed her around. I sat down, and I said, how'd you like that? And she kind of shrugged her shoulders. And I'm getting more and more frustrated because I'm not doing anything for the patient. And I said, you know, is there anything I can do? I come here twice a week, and I really want to help you. She said, there was a long pause, and then she said, yes, you could leave. And the family came back. I didn't tell them what happened, but I left, and I went back to the hospice office, and I told them the story, and they were hysterical with laughter. And they said, if you could only see yourself, if there was a camera in the corner of the room, and you saw yourself dancing around the discoing to Dating Game music for this dying patient, how funny that was. And I started to laugh too. But that woman taught me such a great lesson that it wasn't my agenda to do anything for her. It was her agenda. And so from then on, I would let the patients be who they were, not try to be lighter, not try to, you know, laugh with them or tell a joke, but just listen to them. That was so important as a volunteer, to just listen to the patient and just to be there with them, whatever it was, even if it was in silence, just be there with the patient. So she was
That's
a
right.
great teacher for me, and also it was a funny moment.
That is a funny moment. Oh, gosh, you know, I don't know that I've ever had a situation even close to that one. That's a really great one.
And the other thing about this patient, and this is very, not funny, but quite wonderful, she loved music, and she had tickets for her and her family for the symphony, season tickets. she was way too ill to go. And so I called the Conservatory of Music and I said, is there any way maybe we can get a gurney and take her to the symphony and she can be in the back somewhere? And they said, no, we have a better idea. We'll send somebody over to play music in her living room for her.
Oh, and they did
that, and the family gathered around, and she had a private concert.
Isn't that wonderful?
And I thought that was so wonderful, you know, that they did that and that that all worked so well.
Right. Music is very important to those who are dying. I had one patient who was imminent, and I was coming there to relieve her two daughters who were round-the-clock exhausted. And when I got there, the woman was, you could just see how agitated she was. Her face was grimacing and things like that, and she was not rested. But she wasn't communicating at this point. And I said to the girls, does your mom have any favorite music that she liked? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, my gosh, she was a Frank Sinatra fanatic. And I realized as I had been walking around the apartment that I saw all this Frank Sinatra paraphernalia. I said, put it on. And so they put it on, and the woman just became so peaceful and so relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
It made all the difference to her.
Mm.
So music is very, very important in hospice. Now I'm going to give you an opportunity to just promote yourself a little bit. Why don't you tell us how to get your books and how to reach you and, you know, whatever you
sure.
want to tell us.
All that good stuff, which restaurants I like, where they can send the gift certificates to those restaurants.
Absolutely, right.
So on the Internet, www.alanklein.com. The trick is you need to spell my names right. It's AllenKlein.com. AllenKlein.com. My books, all of them are on Amazon or my site. And again, Amazon, you need to just put in my name, AllenKlein.com. Anybody want to email me, they can do that at humor, which is what we're talking about, at, and then AllenKlein, all one word, .com. And what else? I don't know. I do keynote speeches all over the country.
Okay.
Mostly in the healthcare
one?
Arena. Pardon me?
Do you know, when is your next one booked?
I have to look at the calendar.
All right. Don't stress. Let me let you talk a little bit about your newest book, Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By.
Well, you know, I've written a number of inspirational motivation quotation books, and I was thinking, because I'm getting up in years, like, what is life? Why am I here? You know, how have I enjoyed the journey or how to enjoy the journey? And I thought, those are three great questions to research, to ask other people what they think life is or how they enjoy the journey. And so I started to do all that research, mostly for my own edification, so I could see what other people think about that. And suddenly I found I had hundreds of quotes, and it turned into this book, Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By. And
it's a great book. I actually have a copy of that. Very, very good book.
Thank you. So that's the latest book. And the next one, thank you for asking, will come out next April. So people have to wait a while. But it's called You Can't Ruin My Day.
Oh, great.
Because
great.
I think we give away our power to other people or situations, and we allow them to ruin our day. So it's 52 ways to not let anyone ruin your day.
Perfect. Well, we'll look forward to reading that. It's been wonderful having you as my guest today. Last week, for those who are listening, we had technical difficulties. I kept calling and getting a busy signal, and we could not connect with Blog Talk Radio. So we arranged for Alan to be here today, which is exactly 1 week later, and I'm so glad that you were able to come back on. It's just been a wonderful experience having you, Alan.
You're not going to say we're done.
Yeah, we're getting close. We're
all
getting
right.
close.
You know, one thing, if we have a little bit, just a little bit of time, we were going to talk about Robin Williams passing.
Well, I only have about a minute or so. I only have about a minute or so for that.
Okay.
So we're really not going to have a whole lot of time to do that.
Okay. Just one thing about that, I think, yes, it's important because we talked about grief, to focus on grieving, but also to move on and focus on gratitude and the fact that he gave us so much during his lifetime.
What a great statement. Very, very true. Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much. Sorry we have to end this. I really am. It's been a lot of fun.
I'll be back. I can come back.
Okay, that sounds great.
Next book. Yeah,
let me know when you have the next one, and we'll have you back on.
Terrific. It was such a joy chatting with you, Randy. I appreciate your asking me to be on the show.
Oh, thank you for coming on, and have a really great day, a funny day.
You too, and don't let anyone ruin your life.
Okay, I won't.
Or your
All
day.
Right.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, like I said, we are out of time for today. That was a funny show. But if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. You know me on the radio, but now you can speak with me privately and confidentially on the telephone from your own home about any issues that concern you. For more information about coming to me for counseling, please visit clarity.fm/randy-g-fine. That's C-L-A-R-I-T-Y dot F as in Frank, M as in Mary, / RANDI-G-FINE. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. More followers will get the show the recognition that it deserves. And what you can do is at the top of every show page is an opportunity for you to sign up to be a follower. Also, visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration and join the list of devoted followers there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website, randygfine.com. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. There's a better way.